Welcome to Straight from the Horse's Mouth Radio Show. I'm Paula Slater, your host. This is an interview-based podcast where I have conversations with some of the most interesting and creative people in the horse world. All right, today I'd like to welcome Debbie Roberts Laux, to Straight from the Horse's Mouth Radio Show. Welcome, Debbie.
Thank you, Paula. Happy to be here.
Now, Debbie, you are the daughter of Monty Roberts.
That's right.
Also an author.
Also an author, yes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so glad I used my college degree.
And you're now working for your parents in the business.
Yes. We took up, after my kids were just about through their high school years and just before they went off to college, I rejoined my family in the family business. And it's Monty and Pat Roberts. They both do authoring and training of horses, and Dad demonstrates all over the world. And a lot of people will know him from The Man Who Listens to Horses. That was his New York Times bestselling book that was published first in the UK in 96 and then in the US in 97.
Mm-hmm. And your mom is also artistic as well.
Oh, yes. She has art coming out of her fingertips. She is a sculptress, and she does sculpt most often horses, which is easy as targets around here to see. But also, she's gone to Africa and done some of the big cats, and she does little dogs and some of the, you know, some of those things that are also around us horse owners sometimes. Yes.
Mm-hmm. So, what medium does she work in?
Her best medium is bronze. She Ooh. Will start with the plasticine mm-hmm. and then build on an armature. Sometimes they're desktop and sometimes they're quite grand on scale, not life size, but she does some pieces that would, you know, you'd see them in a hotel lobby as opposed to your living room. It's pretty big. But beautiful pieces that are eventually sent to a foundry and put into there's about a 7-part process I won't go into. She can do it better than I anyway, but it does eventually get poured into a bronze, and then a patina is put on with an acid wash and a flame blower. It's quite dramatic putting mm-hmm. a bronze there. It's beautiful.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. Now, just mention the two books that you've written, or three, actually. You're a co-author.
Co-author, and I would call it two.
Oh,
Yeah.
Well, I think there was one. Is there a workbook that goes with them?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Does that count? All right.
Yes.
2.5. But yes, Dr. Sue Kane came and took a course from the school here some years ago, and she's a brilliant lady and a horse owner since a child, and rode polo ponies, and we're about the same age. I mean, we're literally. We're born the same year. We're very close in the same age, and we just get along like sisters. And she's a really bright gal and got into the corporate training world but loves horses. And when she came out here, she said, you know, we could do some fun things together. Let's do. And we said, yes, let's do. And so the first thing we wanted to do was actually bring that book we mentioned, The Man Who Listens to Horses, back to fore, because there was a whole generation like her daughters. She started with kids later than I did, and her daughters didn't really know, you know, what that whole movement was about. This, I don't think it's a perfect term to be called natural horsemanship, because there isn't much natural about a predator and prey relationship. But The Man Who Listens to Horses was such a revolution, really mm-hmm. turned the industry kind of upside down as far as, I would say the amateurs took back their horses from the professionals a little bit and said, you know, let's rethink how we have to get performance out of our horses and take violence out of that scenario. And that changed a lot of things in the 90s for those who missed it. You know, that's a reiteration. And we thought, well, let's take the life lessons from The Man Who Listens to Horses. Let's break it down and kind of create a new interest for The Man Who Listens to Horses from an outsider's perspective, because that Man Who Listens to Horses book is Dad's autobiography. It started off really in 1989 when Queen Elizabeth called him over to demonstrate what he did with a horse that was different, she'd been reading about, she said, you know, there should be a book about this because this is so far afield of where we've come with horse training that you really need to bring us back to what the horses really are asking for. And he said, well, I don't, you know, I do videos. How about, can I do a video? And she said, no, books last, videos go away, you know? And he said, well, okay, I'll set out to do a how-to. But how do you do a how-to about something that nobody really understands, or, you know, it's so far in left field that it just wouldn't be something somebody would seek out to read. How to do something that you don't even know what it is. You know, nobody's going to seek out a how-to. Mm-hmm. So they fooled around for about 4 years trying to figure out some format that made sense, and they had ghost writers come in, and that just sounded silly. And so finally he said, you know what, I'll just write my story, because that's how I discovered these concepts back when I was a kid laying on my belly in the desert of Nevada, and I just observed the horses and it made good sense to me, and then I just took the logic from there, and I figured out that the flight animal doesn't want force or pain in their life. They flee from it, and that's in their nature, and that we as predators, and it's in our nature to want to force and dominate, and it doesn't work as a partnership. So he just wrote his book from what he learned, and that made sense, and obviously it resonated. I think there's over 1.6 million copies of that book sold now, and it's certainly not just a horse book, you know, it really crossed demographics and went into a lot of people's hearts and minds that there is a better way. And it is, of course, everybody knows the Horse Whisperer movie. That
was pivotal, probably.
Yeah, kind of a two-edged sword, because if anybody actually saw the movie as opposed to the book was really a novel about a torrid love affair. So my mom likes me to point that out. It really wasn't an autobiography of his. It was a novel.
Yes.
Robert Redford bought the rights to the book by Nicholas Evans was a UK author who had seen Dad on tour in the early 90s when the Queen promoted that tour. She put him in her own car, and my mom and dad and his rider, Sean McCarthy, drove all around England demonstrating these concepts, and people were amazed. And so the Horse Whisperer, Nicholas Evans, wrote the book, the novel, because that was kind of a cool thing back then. And then Robert Redford kind of cleaned it up for family and made the movie. But he used force and domination in a couple of scenes, and it kind of made people gasp, which I guess is good for drama, but it wasn't so good for the concepts, because people said, oh, I see, that's what horse whispering is, or that's what natural horsemanship is. Ultimately, you figure out a way to dominate the horse and have him come to your way. No. And in fact, it's not even as scintillating as the actual process of join-up. So we really wanted, Sue Kane and I, getting back to co-authoring, we really wanted people to come back to that book and that concept of a pure join-up is a pure partnership there. It's that the moment of join-up, to define it, is that moment when the horse chooses to be with you rather than finding value from fleeing from you. Does that make sense?
Yes, yeah. Yes. And I would ask you this. Is that a choice every moment for the horse? In other words, today I'm going to join up with you, human, but tomorrow I am deciding not to join up with you, human. That's the horse speaking.
It's a good question, because there is a moment of join up, and then there is living by the principles of join up for the rest of you and your horse's relationship together. So if you act outside of the concepts and principles that you have, if you sort of made a promise with him, you've said, okay, I'm trustworthy. Here is how I act. I respect the fact that when my eyes lock on your eyes and snap there, you're going to go away. And when I soften my eyes and turn on a 45, you're invited in. And that's a principle. And that's taught in the herd when the baby foal is growing up. That's the dialogue, if you want to call it. It's a gestural language. We realize that horses don't have guttural, you know, they don't have a vocal language, but they do have a gestural language. That's right. You know, we all know what the mare means when she pins those ears back on her head. We call it stink eye and other things, but, you know, It says all she needs to say about go away. Well, we snap as predators. Our eyes are on the front of our faces. So when we say go away, we snap our eyes on, just like a big cat would or a bear would or anything else in the large predator family. Those eyes on the front of our head, you know, just drill a hole in a horse. And that just says in every fiber, go away. So if we live by those principles and we don't move quickly around them as if we're with our fingers open looking very much like a claw, and we use soft language. You know, the horse that is 18 years old and had been around his, you know, 12-year-old owner his life, he will allow us to look into his eyes. He will allow us to make a quick movement and laugh and have fun. But they are allowing. They're very generous that way. They're allowing that to be a human thing, and it doesn't frighten them anymore. So we're really talking about a horse that is learning to be with us and learning to communicate with us and live with us, you know, in the same environment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, with the books that you've written, you're aiming this at more, not just generally for horses, but you're expanding it into the business world and, you know, talking to leaders of countries and corporations, yeah, et cetera.
That's right. I mean, right? After we wrote the first one that I was just describing, Life Lessons from the Man Who Listens to Horses, we decided that, you know, that was a lot of fun and we're crazy, so we'll go in and try something new. And this is really, mm-hmm, Dr. Sue Kane's world. Is she is an experiential trainer of leaders, ah, and a great reader of the psychology of business leaders. And so I really brought the horse side of it to her and the Monty side of it, and she brought to me the 30 years of learning that she has from all the different philosophies of corporate training. And we use those. We cite those throughout the book. We have stories from actual leaders who have used these concepts in their corporations, in their big corporations, and they were really successful doing that. And we also used, we cite books of that are by corporate leaders that have put out philosophies, Daniel Pink's, and, you know, some of these people that if you're, uh-huh, in the corporate world, you may, mm-hmm, have read them. But we really drilled down to where they use things in parallel with what we're using so that it brought it all together. It was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun that way to use, mm-hmm, anecdotes that way and a lot of citing. So we decided to do that because we thought, you know, they're really – people are trying to figure out how soft management, if you want to call it that, what does it look like to be a leader in this high-tech world, in this fast-paced social media world? What is it like to be that with still structure and inspiration? You know, how is that like being with a horse? Well, a horse is a 1,000-pound animal. You can't take a horse and force him to do anything, really. You can cajole, or if you can force him, it would be very temporary. Let's put it that way. If you actually hit a horse or make him do something he doesn't want to do, he might do it on the day, but he's going to be resentful possibly for the rest of his life if this is the relationship you've established. You know, if you said, okay, I get it now, I'm going to force you and you're going to submit, they're always going to be out to get you at some point, right? They resent being brought into a partnership where they don't have a choice. Now, doesn't that sound a little bit like an employee who might not be happy with his job?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
So we use those parallels in our book, Horses for Leaders, Building Trust-Based Relationships. We use those parallels to say, in this high-tech world that's moving so fast, how does a leader say, you know what, I'm just here to support you and to inspire you, to be a leader for you, but not force you to do your job? In the technology alone, you know, if you're a 40-plus leader in a company, and that's a pretty good demographic, pretty broad demographic.
Yes.
And you've got a 20-something fresh out of college who can run computers behind his back faster than you can, right? And he understands technology and he can move with it and adapt and You don't want to tell him what to do. You want to give him the goal way out here and tell him where you want to go and tell him where the company wants to go and let him find his way to that with discipline. Okay, so there's the big, you know, italicized term, with discipline. So what does that look like? Well, that's the same thing that people who want to get into natural horsemanship or a choice-based training of horses, they say the same thing. They say, okay, I don't want to hit the horse. I don't want to yell at the horse. I don't want my trainer to tell me I must make the horse cross the water with a buggy whip. You know, I don't want to do that. So what does that look like? Well, not to be self-serving, but read the book and read, you know, Dad's training book. He has a textbook called From My Hands to Yours, and he only wrote one textbook, and he's written several books. But that book encompassed everything that answers the question of how do you ask a horse to do something without forcing him to do it, you know, in a partnership method. Horses are generous. He just wants to understand what you want. And if you do a good job being clear, concise, and fair, and clarifying every step of the way, he'll go, aha. And that is so much fun when you're training a horse to see the little aha go off, like, oh, that's what you wanted. I get it. I'll do it for you now. Why didn't you say so quicker? You know, it's the same thing with leaders too.
Yeah.
Their job really is to be really clear, concise, and fair, and tell what the goals of the company are. And then, you know, get your team together and let them go in a direction and listen to them when they say, you know, you told me the goal was over here and you asked me to use these three tools. But what if we had this fourth tool over here and we brought it in and could get to that goal even faster? Are you okay with that? Don't say no. It's not a good idea. Listen to them. Let them partner with you. And if they hit a brick wall, that's okay. It's kind of like a contract. It's like if we all contract together and say, this is, we're all on the same team and we all want to go here. If you do anything outside that contract, the consequences are on you, but the contract is the bad guy. The team isn't the bad guy or the leader isn't the bad guy. It's the contract. So when that employee or, you know, you could be on a nonprofit board, you know, when another board member hits the wall and makes a mistake, they look at that contract and, you know, you regather yourself and you look over your goals and the structure that you laid out for yourself to get there. And you go, where was that? You know, how did that happen? You know, that, or maybe we need to make another line item in here in our agreement, but that was outside of our goal setting moment. And the discipline becomes the contract that you've all made to get somewhere and go somewhere, you know, and it's a lot more fun that way too.
Yes. Going back to your dad and the company, what direction is it taking now?
Oh, so where Dad's legacy is heading. Is that your question?
Yes. And also I'm thinking too about the new direction with healing, horse sense and healing.
Oh, thank you for asking about that. This has been so much fun, Paula. There are things that you do during the day. Probably the 80-20 rule applies here a little bit, but there are things that you do during the day that get you very far. And there's a lot of stuff you do that it just doesn't, you know, realize into anything for the long term. You know, this is not going to go in your time capsule or anything. And, you know, you got to go through the 80% of brushing your teeth and doing things all day long that, you know, are just kind of methodical and boring. And but they get you through your day and you got to do them. And then there's that 20% that just, you know, takes you into the stratosphere and it makes you want to get up the next morning and do it all over again. And the using the concepts in the human world has been so much fun. In other words, taking Shy Boy, our Mustang that we adopted in the 97 when he was 3 years old, taking him to schools and showing join up to, you know, a whole playground of elementary school children or high school or alternative high school children who, you know, half of them standing around are pregnant and the other half got them there. You know, yeah. Challenges. These
At-risk
youth, yep. And we've had so many fun times going out and doing things like that. And I know the concepts are helping them to understand about communication and trust and all those good things. And we've gone into prisons and we put the round pin up in a yard, Indianapolis Women's Prisons, there was a men's prison down in Florida. As we crisscross the nation, we've done that, and it's very gratifying and it's wonderful. But I'd have to say, I could name a few other programs that we've been in, and it's very gratifying, but not to miss anybody. But the most gratifying has been working with the veterans, no question, hands down. So we started working with the veterans. It really goes back to Dad's time at Cal Poly San Luis Obispo when he was in university. He wanted to study psychology along with his animal husbandry courses, and he was really toying with animal behaviorism before there was anything about that. That just wasn't a curriculum for that. And he volunteered for a thing they called Silver City, which was all these picture Airstreams. Do you know those silver topped little tiny mobile homes? They're tiny.
Oh yes.
Yeah, you live
yes.
In. They had this thing, this part of the campus called Silver City, because there was just hundreds of these little Airstreams that they were putting the returnees' families together. In other words, if a guy was coming back from the Korean War and he was married and he had, a child or two, that's where they went in. They went to the family housing, yeah? And mm-hmm. they were just right up against each other. It was just a lot to ask of families to be in such close proximity in these tiny little things. And the domestic violence was it was just really tough. And Dad's volunteering as a first responder was his first, since he wasn't in the military, it was really his first exposure to war and what it can do to the human brain. And this was the first war really fought on drugs, It was before Vietnam, and it was after World War II, really. And there was a lot of Asian experimental drugs coming back. And that put a new dimension of violence into the whole scenario. And it was really an education for him. And so years later, when we were throwing this mud up on the wall, in other words, helping where we could with the human-to-human interactions and using Join Up and the Horses, one thing that came across was the Discovery Channel approached us, and they said, we would like you to do something for the military channel on Discovery. And we went, really? Not the animal channel? It was the military channel? It didn't, I had to
ask
twice. And they said, no, we've got this thing called PTSD, or post-traumatic stress disorder, that really is haven't, taken a lot of our young guys away from us and gals. And as the stat, you probably know it now, it's 22 suicides a day. And that is just unbelievable. I mean, the ratio of battlefield deaths is far outpaced by PTSD deaths back here. And it really bothered Dad that they were being called someone with a disorder. They didn't go to war with a disorder. So you come out with a disorder, that sounds like an injury, And if you can be injured, you can heal. If you don't die. So we thought, before they die, let's see if we can heal that injury. And let's let them experience Join Up. Let's let them understand trust and communication again. It's the coolest thing, Paula, because we'll talk them through what a Join Up is going to be, and we do human-to-human Join Ups, and we do a lot of prep work on the first day. It's a three-day clinic we have now called Horse Sense and Healing. And the Horse Sense and Healing is we do about five a year now on the farm, and it really has, I would love to say that we're doing something for the veterans, but it's really something for us. I'd have to say it's one of those,
everyone
credit
wins.
For it, but yeah.
Yeah, that's good.
But it's a wonderful program, and it's only, a lot of people do veterans programs, a lot of people do equine therapy, but this is not equine therapy. This is really a life-altering behavioral. Horses are a great way to modify behavior, because somebody who is very introvert and not a leader, needs to put their leadership skills in place in order to get that horse to even pay attention to you. So if you go into that round pen intending to do a join up and you have no leadership skills, the horse will just la la la. He will not pay much attention to you. And if you go in there in the opposite way and you're 250 pounds just back from Afghanistan and you say, golly, I dominate everything. I was taught to kill. I wasn't untaught to kill. I was taught not to trust, and I wasn't taught to trust again when I came back. I'm going to show this horse what I need to do out here. Well, he's 1,000 pounds and you're 250. Whoops. You sounded big until you got into that 50-foot round pin with him, and you actually had no idea what to do. And you couldn't force that horse to do anything. There's no, you know, we don't put a lead on them. It's just at liberty in the round pin. They have to learn how to communicate their wishes with that horse in order for that horse to say, yeah, I think maybe I'll trust you and come close to them. Otherwise, they can't even catch the horse in a 50-foot round pin. So it has been hugely gratifying. We have continued to get grants enough to put about 70 or 75 veterans through the program annually. But one important thing we do is we invite the families to also come. Mm-hmm. And so that exponentially adds to the impact we're having. And I encourage people to go to joinup.org. That's a hyphen, join, join-up. up.org and look at the veterans link there and see what we're doing and see if people are interested in that or have a veteran that they would like to send our way. We're in Solvang, California. That's Santa Barbara County, and we're just really pleased with the program. But you know, it is, again, it's about leadership. It's our feeling of responsibility to give back. You know, they fought for us, and so it isn't right that 22 a day are committing suicide.
That's right.
And it's when they're here, you know, we're supposed to be embracing. So this is a way that they can heal if they choose to. You don't have to be a horse person at all. In fact, I think it's better if you're not.
Right.
The horse people, we've had just this, we had one in July. We had a horse sense and healing clinic in July. And the only person in the room that had ever been around horses, his first day, he admitted at the end of the first day, he says, do you drug these horses or do you train them?
Oh.
We said, who did either? And he goes, nah, I don't know. I grew up around horses. I don't think horses act that way. And so for the next 2 days, you can imagine where Dad's focus was. He worked on this guy, but we got him in the round pen with a totally fresh horse that he knew happened to be in quarantine, so we, you know, he couldn't be around other horses, so he knew we hadn't trained it or anything, and he was a believer after that. It was great to see. He actually, his wife, you know, was so excited.
Yeah.
Because a little bit of a hard nose before that, so he was really excited about the whole program, and he'll be one that comes back and helps us.
Now, how long is the program?
Well, it's 3 days.
Oh.
And it's free to the veterans and their. And it's a Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And Friday is really the day that we share a lot. We start the early training of what's going to happen in the round pin. Then Saturday, it's join ups all day long. We also have a module called Up Close and Personal, where they get to sync with the horse. They understand the horse is an animal of synchronicity, a herd animal. So that means their heart rates will begin to sync with ours. Their adrenaline levels will sync with ours. So a lot of that physiology of veterans, that is something we need to tackle, happens on that day too.
Wow. And that is such a short program, and you are getting really positive, long-lasting results, correct?
Yes. Yes, because it's a portal. You know, it's certainly not drugs or anesthetics. Yeah. But it's a portal to say, you know, golly, maybe I can trust. They just are not taught to re-enter society and be able to trust themselves or their families. You know, they really think that they have changed. They know they've changed,
yes.
But they hate being reminded about it. And and they just think their family has an agenda and their therapist has an agenda and their employer has an agenda. I'm generalizing now, but if you really put your feet where their feet are, you know, and see it through their eyes, they haven't been given that portal yet to come back and address these things that were taken away from them. Trust is taken away. You have to have soldiers that don't trust anything over there. You have to have trained, you know, they have trained killers. I don't know how else to say it. And going through that and you know, don't even get into military sexual trauma and some of the things that they go through. And no wonder they come back with an injury, but it is post-traumatic stress injury. Yes. And it can be healed if that's their choice.
From my point of view, I think it's sort of sad. Well, it is sad that there's only one place that this can be used. In other words, there should be much more in the United States and Canada, or everywhere, that the soldiers are coming back to help them. And one location is not enough.
It's too few. I agree with you. So we do have a training program for our instructors, because we would like to put this, and it's not just in the U.S. We have, instructors that are going off to the U.K. Dad has put on a couple of different, maybe we're up to three or four now, Horse Sense and Healings on in the U.K. The U.K. Horse Sense and Healings have been super successful because we have been able to bring in some pretty darn high up generals. I don't know the military names for them over there, but they intuitively understood what we were doing, and they weren't horse people necessarily, so they got it, which I really, really appreciate them for. And they would like to kind of partner with us on this, and so I'm really excited about that. But our long-term plan, so that it's not just, 70 or 75 veterans per year, or even if we did one a month, that's just double what we're doing now, or a bit more. Even if we did that, it's a drop in the bucket, right, Paula? So what we're doing is, since it's such a highly specialized thing to know join up, is we've taken our instructors and we're offering up courses in the specific training of horse sense and healing, and they love it. We didn't know if they would, actually. 2 years ago, we went into their conference. We have the instructors' conference. There's about 60 instructors worldwide. And in the conference, we said, who might be interested? Oh my gosh, practically the whole room raised their hand, which was heartwarming, because some of these countries don't even go to war. So, for them to understand the healing process they go through, and the families. Remember, the families didn't go to war. The interesting thing about the behavioral patterns that are set up, that when these guys come back and gals come back, they have behaviors that are different than when they went in. In other words, if you get them upset, they're cut off on the freeway, their reactions are much bigger typically than they used to be. Their angers can be quicker and bigger. Or on the other hand, they might go inside themselves. They might have had a normal reaction before and now they've just gone introvert. There was one lady that we had through one of the early courses that hadn't been out of her house for 30 years. She was a Vietnam vet. So we have different reactions to the whole war experience and the post-traumatic stress. So what's interesting about that is these instructors intuitively know the healing aspects of what going through join up is with normal people. So they can understand absolutely how people who aren't around horses could find healing in this reaction in going through the join up. So we're taking those people, they're already trained by the Monty methods. Now we're just refining the curriculum that we've created for this 3-day program. And we have clinical psychologists that have contributed to the program. We use an aspect called motivational interviewing, which is a study with a gentleman that Dad has been in parallel work with since the 90s. And there's aspects to it that are different than any other program out there, because it's just not equine therapy. In fact, Dad was the keynote speaker for at Bravehearts in Illinois for the national conference of the certified instructors that specifically have equine therapy in their programs. And they were coming to him saying, hey, we work with veterans all the time, but we know we're not quite there. What are you doing, Monty, that gets it there? And that's what I'm saying is this the whole concept of join up and what we're teaching our instructors to understand intuitively, it's the language of equus. It's the language, it's gestural language of horses, and completely being natural within their gestural system, their flight mechanism. Understanding that horse gets that horse in the trailer much faster. And, you know, a lot of people say, oh, you're so patient with horses. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? We get that comment a lot, like, oh, you take such long looks at a horse's issue, and you deal with it in such a patient, slow way. I don't know if I have the patience to do that. You know, this is a comment we get a lot, and it's so interesting. Take loading on the trailer, for example. Some people will say, oh my gosh, Monty, I saw you do a demonstration. You know, he almost always on a tour, he will wrap up his evening with a non-loader. We call them the non-loaders. And often those people ride their horses to the event.
Yes.
Because as said, they're non-loaders. And if you can't get a stock trailer borrowed from somebody, then you have to find your way there. And so the stories are, almost comical if they weren't so frustrated, the poor owners. You know, it's hilarious all the things that they've gone through. They've gone through drugs, you know, trying to relax the horse. They've tried to feed the horse through the trailer out in the pasture. They've tried, gone to every trainer they can imagine. They've gotten psychics. You know, I've heard everything. And so the interesting thing is, Dad saves typically the last 15 or 20 minutes of the demonstration for the non-loader. Oh, what did you say? 15 or 20 minutes for the non-loader? Remember, often they come 3 or 4 hours early because it took them hours to get the horse in the trailer, and they didn't know if they were going to be able to get the horse in the trailer. And so what he does is he begins to teach with the dually halter. That's his training halter that's based on the concepts of a twist, as opposed to no knots, no pain, no pole pressure. It's based on the twist of just around the muzzle there. And the horse learns to come off that bit of twist or that pressure that the soft, round cotton rope lends to itself, works with the nature of the horse. So he works with the dually halter, and then he sets up he doesn't like step-ups, but if he has to use a step-up, he will, but he prefers ramps. I'll just put that note
That's
in
good.
There. But he starts to get a horse walking over a tarp, walking over some boards maybe or something, get that hoof sound on there. And then he starts walking toward the trailer, and then he says, no, don't go on the trailer. I don't want you to go on the trailer. Oh, you want to go on the trailer? No, I don't want you to go on the trailer. You remember how kids do that? Don't go in that room over there. No, I don't want you to go in that room. You know, what? You don't want me to go over there. I want to go over there now. And so, you know, there is a process, and a lot of people are going, okay, let me note that. Okay, went over dually work. Okay, then he, psychology of the horse. Wow, that's a lot of stuff, Monty. You are so patient with horses. I can't believe all the steps you took. And in 15 minutes, the horse is on the trailer. Now, here's the irony, right? It took him 15 minutes to get the horse on the trailer. So who's more patient? I think the patient person is the one who tried for 3 or 4 hours earlier in the day to get the horse loaded, but wouldn't try all these different little steps just to get the horse feeling comfortable to load. It's his choice by the end to load on the trailer. And then getting the horse off the trailer. A lot of times, that's the last thing they'll do. This is kind of funny. Is they will, as soon as they get that horse on the trailer, it's like, oh my gosh, close the door, lock it, put 5 locks on it. Don't let that horse on the trailer. And the first thing he does is pull that horse right off the trailer again and go, no, was that a mistake? Ah, what are you doing in there, you know? And then puts him back on, then takes him back off, puts him back on, takes him back off. And now the horse doesn't feel like he's locked in there and, oh my gosh, we're going for a 5-hour ride, you know? So you take away all the problems, the phobias, the issues, the unknowns that this horse is going through. And pretty soon, you have in 15 minutes, you loaded a horse on a trailer. So who's more patient?
Mm-hmm. Yes, and it's perspective, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And also, it's just a different way of thinking or looking at it, because it may seem, obvious, but the person hasn't flip-switched their mind to think about that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And when you do start thinking like that, Paula, it's so much fun, because you begin to, you feel like a kid learning again, like, oh, what else can I challenge myself? Like, oh, he doesn't like doing that. let's figure out why, you know. And there's can be a lot of reasons. It could be a flashback for a horse, you know, he had a bad experience in that. Or mostly it's because they're neophobic. They're afraid of anything new. You know, that's what got them surviving millions of years, longer than us, is that they don't trust anything that they don't understand or have never seen before. And that's okay. And that you might walk by the same bucket that you walked by yesterday, and it might have a different sunshine on it or a different, you know, it just, it's upside down today and it wasn't yesterday. That's to them neophobic too. And sometimes that's confusing people, like, ah, that's the same bucket we walked by yesterday. Are you kidding? But not to them. It, you know, it might be something that could kill them today. Mm-hmm. So we, you know, you got to be patient with that, because that's what their nature is. And that's what we love about them, is they're not aggressive and they're not, you know, they trust us. So that's wonderful. So we get to take care of them. So if they're afraid of something, they look to us for that leadership.
Yeah. And I think that's especially difficult for women who are used to protection from something bigger. And I think sometimes in situations like that, women will go to their horse thinking that, but you really, they need to sort of get into a different mind space about that, you know?
Yeah. I think you're more in the nurturing leadership position with the horse than you are, them taking care of you. Now, a horse, on the other hand, will take care of you. I mean, even if your tush is moving all over, that they'll try to keep under you. You know, they're very generous that way. They don't want us to come off. That's a frightening thing too. So they do look to us for that leadership, and they are very generous to keep us safe. But on the other hand, that's why we get off sometimes, isn't it? Where if the horse is really afraid, we get off and we say, look, we're going to walk it this time, you know. But it isn't, you know, that's just more of a crutch for them. You can use another horse for that. You know, we do a lot of training with companion horses. If a horse is going through something for the first time, get an old gelding who's, you know, just been around the block. And you can use other animals for that too. If some people are more afraid to train from the ground, some people are more afraid to train from the saddle. You know, lean on your other uncles, and an old gelding is worth his weight in gold for teaching a lot of things like that, and to keep us safe. And they make us feel better too. They'll keep our adrenaline lower too.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Oh yes, there's lots on that. Now, Debbie, is there anything that we haven't covered that you would like to speak about right now?
Tons of things pop up. It's so much fun. There's a lot of common ground.
Well, let me take this opportunity to invite you back and discuss more. Because, yes, there is, I feel that there's tons to ask and to explore. And so how can people reach you? There's a Facebook page, I know that. So if someone wanted to take the Horse Sense and Healing course, or how can they reach you?
Yeah, thank you. Our main office is our corporate number here in California is probably a good clearinghouse for everything, and that is an area code 805-688-6288. But I would definitely go to the website, montyroberts.com, and that's MontyRoberts.com. And you'll get a lot of education there. But the Facebook page, if people are into social media, that is the most active thing. I think we have about 355,000 friends on there now, which just really plays to the fact that we're pretty international at this point. We really are reaching into the corners of the earth, which is our mission. So, so that's good. And then my most proudest moment we really haven't even talked about, which is the Monty Roberts University. So that's another site they can go to, which is Monty, MontyRoberts University.com. And that's our Equus online university. So if people are really interested in these concepts, and that maybe they're not a book reader as much as they are video, and it's so much more than a YouTube, but let me put it that way. It's a subscriber base. It's less than $10 a month, and it's the most comprehensive. Really, a lot of the lessons go back to 2004. So there's over 360 lessons up there now, and they're bite-sized 10-minute video lessons, but they have text as well. So we have lesson notes and we have challenge questions and we have a forum. It is so much fun. That's my proudest moment. But they can, so they can get to us through MontyRoberts.com. They can see a lot of the learning. They can get on there for free actually and try it out too on the MontyRobertsUniversity.com. And then the Horse Sense and Healing program is on our joinup.org. And that was what I had mentioned before, join-up.org, and they can see the veterans program there. They can see where the course taught at the school. That's all through our not-for-profit arm, and it's a 501c3, so there's tax advantage to support the program. But if you're a veteran or if you know of a veteran that might have an advantage going through this, we would love for them to contact us through that website or at that phone number, the 805-688-6288.
That's wonderful.
Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Debbie, for this time. I really appreciate it. And I would like to invite you back to pick a topic, either the university or whatever you wish, at another time.
Thank you.
You would be up for that?
Of course I would. I enjoy your show. I thank you so much for singling me out and inviting us to speak
today. Okay. All right. Well, then we'll say goodbye.
All right. Hasta la vista.
Bye. I hope you enjoyed my interview today with Debbie Roberts-Laux, and the information that we talked about will be on the website Straight from the Horse's Mouth Radio Show. All the links to Monty Roberts' websites and the university, etc. This is Paula Slater signing off for Straight from the Horse's Mouth Radio Show. We'll see you next week. Bye.